You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. And welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show, where we deal with a lot of issues dealing with special needs people throughout British Columbia on the NCRE Radio Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn. On this episode, we have some talks that we're going to do through YouTube, even though Michael Rubin is not here right now. I'm hoping that he will be here anytime soon, but you never know. But we're going to do an episode clip of yesterday's Autism Live that was broadcast through YouTube, and everything you need to know on what's happening with autism in general. And if you like to look up the information about Autism Live and receive a free newsletter, go to the website www.autism-live.com/join-r-email-list.aspx. And again, Autism Live is a production of the Center of Autism-Related Disorders, or known as CARD, headquartered in Woodland Hills, California. And with offices throughout the United States and around the globe. And again, for more information on the therapy of autism and other related disorders, you can check out more information on it by going to the website www.centerforautism.com. Here's the live clip from yesterday. And it's 2 hours, so we're not going to do all of 2 hours. Sorry, we're just having a little bit of a technical difficulties here. Hopefully we'll get it started.
Good morning, and welcome to On the Spectrum with Matt Asner. I'm Matt Asner, and this is On the Spectrum. It's been a while. I feel like I haven't been here for a while, and it's nice to be back. We're doing our June show. We have some great guests today. We have John Asher, who directed the movie Poe, which you all have to run out and see. And we also have Nava Paskowitz-Asner, my wife, and we're going to talk about all sorts of wonderful stuff. I wanted to do my opening on...
We apologize. That's not going to happen right now. The sound doesn't look... it sounds terrible, so we're not going to play it. Next, we're going to play you a thing from Ask Dr. Doreen that happened on Wednesday, June 22nd. Again, if you want more information, go to www.centerforautism.com. Let's try this again one more time. There we go. Thank you.
Welcome back to Autism Live and to Ask Dr. Doreen. We're here with Dr. Doreen Grandpuche, and she's answering your questions in real time. Our next question, hello, Shannon and Dr. Doreen, with an exclamation point. My 5-year-old son attends a progressive kindergarten class. It is not exactly a special education program, but he has a shadow teacher knowledgeable in ABA. We're having a hard time finding school-appropriate reinforcers for him that will not distract the other kids in school. Visual and auditory items are the strongest reinforcers for him, but they can be quite distracting in school. Even glitter bottles, for example, can be distracting because naturally the kids are drawn to these novel items. Any suggestions on reinforcers appropriate in a school setting and how they can be delivered discreetly? Thank you and all the best to you and Card. Your show has been such a blessing, sharing so much valuable information to the public reaching across the globe. And can I just say, she says, I love skills. Any chance you can open services in the
wow, that's so nice.
Isn't that
lovely? It is lovely. I thank you very much for writing in, and I love that you're in the Philippines. I didn't know that. we would love to open services anywhere. What we do internationally, I've stopped focusing on actually opening card sites. What we do in international places is we will affiliate with an existing school or clinic, and then we will train them and supervise them. That's what we did with South Africa, and we still are very involved with them. We have literally supervisors going to South Africa every other month, and we have for 6 years, I think. 6 or 7 years. So it's a long time, and South Africa has 3 sites, and we heavily, it's a complete card program. Same thing we did in Thailand, and we'd be happy to do it in Philippines. Now, so if you know of any good schools, please let us know that are interested in doing the card model. Going back to this, I don't know the functioning level of the child. My recommendation would be to try to implement a token system in the class if possible, and that has to do with if the child is able to jump on board with a token economy. A token economy could work for the whole class, not just for him. And basically, just let me describe what it is for him, and then I'll describe how it would work for if the teacher decided to use it for everyone. So there would be a series of things that are required for him to do by which he would get a reinforcer. What you're doing is you're giving the direct reinforcer, let's say, glitter bottles. I don't know the length of time you give it to him, and I don't know for what. But assume there's a behavior that's expected, and then he gets X amount of time with the glitter bottle. What you're doing with a token economy is you are just giving the reinforcer, being the glitter bottle, after the person earns a certain number of tokens. So it could be a one-to-one exchange. In other words, he would get one token, and then he'd be allowed to go outside for 5 seconds, 5 minutes, play with the glitter bottle, or just leaving the room might be a reinforcer. Or the teacher might want to put an area in the classroom, which is the reinforcement area. This is extremely effective, like for all students. What she could do is she could have an area which is packed with reinforcers for all the kids, and you as a child can access that area for however long is conducive to her teaching her class for specific behaviors. So that's really all it is. She would put up a board, she would have all the names of the kids, and she would have the tasks that they're required to do and what they earn for each task. And once they've earned, let's say, the tokens, by the way, would be stickers, could be drawings, like we used to do, just happy faces. You know, every time you finish a task, you get a happy face. If you get 5 happy faces, you then go to the reinforcement area, like the fun house or whatever it is. And that could be applied to everyone so that everyone's really motivated to pay attention, do their work, and then gain access to those reinforcers.
In Jem's, most of his early classes, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, even third grade, there was some form of a treasure box
That's it.
And there was a choice of toys that came from a dollar store.
Exactly.
That they could choose between. And it was such a big deal to get
huge
to the treasure box.
That's right.
That people tried to gain those tokens.
That's right.
And we also, just so you know, we've done several videos here on Autism Live about token economies, and we even have a template for one. And show you how to laminate and make the little stickers and put the little Velcro on for one type of a token economy. And we talk about the ones that are digital.
Absolutely, yes.
So if you search our topics about token economies, you'll see that there's a bunch of different things that we have there. And if you don't find what you like there, Pinterest, there are all kinds of things on Pinterest. If you put in token economy and if you put in classroom, they have teacher sites where teachers actually make this kind of stuff now, the ones that are good at it.
Yes.
And then they sell it at low cost to other people.
Amazing.
So and it's called Teachers Paying Teachers.
That's great.
And so you can pay $5 and they'll send you off whatever token account it's. So check it out on Pinterest.
That's awesome.
You can lose
That's
your
really
mind
great.
On Pinterest in the best possible way.
Absolutely.
I love me some Pinterest. Okay. I want to shift now to a question that just came in on the live feature from our West Virginia mom. She says, hey, Shannon and Dr. Doreen, her daughter had strep throat for a total of 20 days, started having increased anxiety, OCD, hyperactivity, paranoia, tics, and a long list of other behaviors that followed the strep infection. After seeing her neurologist, she received a diagnosis
of PANDAS. Yes. Yeah.
The tics are painful. She is paranoid. Regression in potty training, regression in speech, and the meltdowns have increased significantly.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations on dealing with PANDAS, and how do I determine what is autistic behavior that needs to be addressed, and what is a side effect from PANDAS that she can't control? Thank you always for the support and help. We love you guys.
Thank you very much. There, you should be talking to a physician who specializes in PANDAS, and this would be an immunologist. And an immunologist will actually offer some medications that will help suppress some of these side effects. And as you were beginning to read the list, I was like, oh, this is PANDAS. And that is, of course, pediatric autoimmune neurological disorder associated with strep. That's how you get PANDAS.
That's a mouthful.
Yes.
I'm glad you knew that.
Yes. So the first time I learned about PANDAS, I remember actually it was in a continuing ed lecture, and I was like, that sounds like a lot of our kids. Like, I wonder how many of our kids have PANDAS. So I wouldn't, please don't think of them as, if it's a symptom of PANDAS, it's not something she can control. You get back into, it's, how do I express this? It's kind of like if you are, let's say if you are ill for whatever reason, let's say you have a gastrointestinal infection or you have food poisoning or whatever it is, you have some sort of illness. During that period of time, so much biochemistry changes that, for instance, you will become more irritable, you will have, like, your skin will crawl, you'll have, you know, headaches, various things, but you can still change some of those things. So the fact that you become more irritable doesn't mean that you can't control your behavior. You can. It's a little harder because you're more irritable and, like, you're on edge, but you can. And so a lot of these things, tics are very, very hard to control, but they are controllable. Okay. Tics are things that the behavior, you can shape the control of tics. There's no question, behaviorally. But mainly, if it is really PANDAS, which obviously she's been diagnosed in, there are immune medication that you should be receiving. So you need to talk to an immunologist, first of all. And then it's so difficult, I know, with our kids when they lose skills they've already achieved, but don't worry, you can regain those skills, and they will regain faster than when you taught them the first time.
While she's going through whatever the treatment is to eradicate the PANDAS, do we put less demands on the child?
No, not really, because at this point you're past the strep. And so now you should get the medication that helps the immune system, essentially strengthens the immune system, and then you should just start reteaching.
Okay.
Start reteaching, and just, you know, at any given time, you want to always gauge how much pressure you should put or how much demand you should put, and that's always equivalent to the amount of reinforcer.
Okay.
As much demand as reinforcer, then your program is good.
Okay.
You have too much demand, not enough reinforcer, child falls apart. Not enough demand, too much reinforcer, you're not moving forward.
Okay.
So you just have to always balance that.
Okay, cool. And then let us know how things go, please.
And best of luck.
Yes, best of luck. Hugs to you. I know that's hard. I want to move on to the next question. I'm working with a family with two autistic children. They are 12 and 5. Can you refer me to any in-home ABA therapists that serve Carver, Massachusetts? I should have looked on the map to see how close that was to Boston. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I would suggest that you try to get in touch with our Woburn office.
Yes.
And they can give you more information about what's available back there.
Okay, cool. And then somebody who writes in and says, I need help with getting my child in a school for autism. We have no other information about their age or where they are.
Right. If you would perhaps write in to us, we do have CART Academies. We are expanding the CART Academies. And then outside of CART, of course, there's many schools that are pretty good. And we can, again, another good source for that would be Love My Provider. That website is very good in terms, it definitely has a category of listed schools.
Okay, wonderful. And this is probably going to be our last question. Good morning. My son has high-functioning autism. Mm-hmm. He's 5. I've noticed an increase in hyperactive behavior when his dad comes home from work. Mm-hmm. What can we change or do differently? Is he just too excited? Also, he likes to pretend fight with his friends. It's never gotten out of control. Would enrolling him in a martial arts class be a good idea or a terrible idea? And thank you for your amazing help.
That's a great idea. Enrolling him in martial arts is a great idea as long as you have a good instructor. Because martial arts teaches the opposite of what most people think. Martial arts teach you control, self-control.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great idea because they will teach him to control his whatever, roughhousing or any kind of thing that he learns in martial arts to specific times and areas. So I think that's a very, very, very good out for him. Now, what happens, and you see this in a lot of different species, not just human beings, but like I'm assuming that he has had physical fun with dad. So like maybe in the past dad has thrown him up and down or whatever, and so now he gets like just, it's classical conditioning. It's like, oh, here's the guy who's going to do some physical stuff with me, so he gets hyper. The easiest thing is to reverse that is just to have dad do a very peaceful activity when he comes home. So immediately when dad comes home, like he will turn on some calming music, sit with him, and maybe look at a book. Or sit down and look at TV together, or you know, sit on a hammock or something that's very calming and soothing. And then before you know it, dad will be associated with more of a calming type thing.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Our dads tend to be the
hyper causing.
I always say that it's, especially when I'm at the check stand with my husband and my son. Even now, the gem is so big and he's 13. It's like two puppies that have gone awry, and then I have to police the two of them. I've just gotten to the point where I pretend I don't know them.
Yeah.
I just pretend that I've never seen them before, that I have no idea who they are.
That's awesome.
I walk out of the store and they're like, "Where'd you go? Where'd you go?" And I go, "I don't know you. I have no idea. I just completely talk
that's
about
so funny.
The response.
That's so funny. I love that.
I don't know them. Because I used to be like, stop it. The two of you, knock it off. Don't need it. You know, and I'd be like, they're like, you got to sign. I'm always the person who does the card and then forgets.
Oh, yeah.
There's 17 steps and everybody in the line at Trader Joe's is like, wait, sometime could you finish? Anyway, that's
perfect.
Story of my life. We are unfortunately out of time, but we
it was a pleasure.
You.
Thank you
we
so much.
So enjoy when we have time with you.
All right, so that was the Ask Dr. Doreen as of yesterday, June 22nd, on issues on disability. And of course, Autism Lives is a production of the Center of Autism and Related Disorders, also known as CARD. You can visit them at centerforautism.com. Michael's here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So it's been a pretty interesting week.
Nice.
Yeah. Lots of chores because I had chores to get done since I'm back now and all that kind of stuff.
House chores.
I got to get caught up on all that sort of stuff. I like what she had to say, though, about martial arts, though.
Yeah. You were mentioning about that. Sorry.
I've been a member of the AKA Taekwondo.
Okay.
And they she's absolutely right. They teach self-control. The idea is not to, a lot of people get that Bruce Lee idea in their head, that we're going to beat everybody up, or Steven Seagal, or whatever they see in the movies. But really the purpose of martial arts is it is self-defense, so that you can get the person away from you, you get the attacker away from you, and then you can escape. Not sit and duke it out with them. It's like,
of course not.
And along with that goes control. And the dojo that I used to go to, run by a friend of mine, Bruce McCann, he was in Richmond. He had a young man in there that was he had autism, and how he got through to him is it was step by step teaching him control. And it's like, and because nobody would, he didn't baby him.
Nope.
A lot of people wanted to baby him. It's like, oh, he has autism, we should baby him. And it's like, that wasn't the right approach. He treated him like he was one-on-one equal with him, and he taught him, let's do this step by step, controlled steps. And then that same person, within a year to 2 years, had earned a black belt.
Right.
And he earned the black belt because he learned control. It wasn't just the movements. No. He learned control. You know? So
in different types of control.
Yeah. And it spilled over into the rest of his life, too. And, you know, he's very successful at in school and everything, and I imagine he move on to being very, very successful in the rest of his life.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So we about pretty much close to three weeks ago, I asked you the question: do you agree on eliminating the $45 bus pass and replacing it with a $25? Monthly fee plan on your persons with disability payment? And of course, next week will be the final episode for me, and I will talk to you all about it and receive all of your emails as well. You still have time to email us, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. I'm going to play you the Down Syndrome from Massachusetts, called the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress. Now, I know it's over about an hour, but we're not going to play all of it. But we're going to kind of like switch gears from autism to Down Syndrome, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
And we'll come right back in just a moment here on the NCRA Radio Networks, both on our Vancouver stations, Co-op Radio and CITR 101.9 FM. Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more. Sorry, it had to be. Had to find the buttons to find the actual buttons to push. But we're back on the Community Living Show on ENCRA Radio Networks. This segment that we're going to play you now is called the IEP Development Considerations for Effective Advocacy, both on the Down Syndrome side of things. And of course, this is also on YouTube as well. We get a lot of information stuff on YouTube, but search under Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress for more information. Here's the clip. Again, we're not going to play all of it because basically on the time situation, it's over an hour and 20 minutes. So if you want to learn more, here's the clip.
With advocacy for both parents and teachers as we sit around a table and develop individualized education plans for students. So I work for the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress, and we are an organization statewide. It's a statewide organization in Massachusetts that is focusing on meeting the needs of individuals and families with Down syndrome throughout the lifespan. We are putting particular focus on the educational needs, both for education professionals and for parents, because we know that parents and teachers really need to make sure that they're working together and problem solving for students. So we appreciate the fact that DSAIA has agreed to collaborate with us and co-host the series of educational webinars to really help provide access to develop professional development in an accessible way that really meets everybody's individual needs. So thank you to Dina and everyone at DSAIA. I encourage all of you to connect to the MDSC. Check out our website. We have published a resource guide for elementary education teachers related to what students with Down syndrome need and how to support meaningful inclusion in the classroom. So I encourage you to check out our website and stay connected to us for updates on information. So I'm going to talk a little bit about me before we begin. So all of you who are on the webinar today understand who I am and the experience that I've had that brings me to the position that I'm in today. So I am a teacher at heart. I worked for 17 years in public schools. I played a variety of different roles. I was a classroom teacher. I was a special education teacher. And I was an inclusion specialist. Currently, I work with the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress as the education director, and I also work as an educational consultant with the 321 Foundation and Learning Program Boston. I have been a special education teacher for many, many years, and 9 years ago, my niece was born with Down syndrome. So where my entire professional focus was really as a generalist supporting students with a variety of learning disabilities and other complex needs that required students to receive specialized instruction and education.
Sorry to interrupt there. We just got to say goodbye to our half-hour program. And we will continue on with the rest of the program. And again, if you want more information about Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress, please visit www.mdsc.com. I think that's what it is. So check them out. Anyways, we got to say goodbye to a half-hour program station. So stay tuned for our half-hour programs as well. And we will be back with station ID, and we'll come right back with more.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
All right, we are back with the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, our full-hour show. And we were discussing on Down syndromes coming together with your child's teams each year. Can be both exciting and successful as you affect upon your child's progress and plan out the new areas of focus over the next calendar year. Of course, we're talking from the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress. Again, check the website www.mdsc.com. Here's the rest of the clip here.
When my niece was born, I really focused my personal and professional attention on what are the needs of students with Down syndrome in particular. And what I've tried to do professionally is try to pull from my experience of, you know, supporting my sister and my brother-in-law through their advocacy for my niece, through my own experience as a practitioner in the trenches, and through my experience working directly with a variety of families who have students with Down syndrome, and also now in my role as consultant, working in many different schools with many different teams, supporting students with complex learning needs. So what I bring to you today is really drawn from all of those experiences. A webinar platform is obviously can be a little bit different than a face-to-face workshop. So I always feel on my end that there's just a lot of talking, but I really do want people to ask questions and ask for clarification. You can type a question into the questions pane. And I'm really happy that somebody's already asked a question. I'm not going to answer them all right now. I am going to stop at intervals and address questions, because otherwise I know for myself and my own learning style, it will feel a little choppy to you on your end. So if you type in a question and I don't address it right away, just know that I'm not ignoring you, but I will stop at specific intervals and address questions from the panelists. So thank you for joining us, and our webinar is going to be recorded today. Dina is taking care of that for us, which is great. And you all will access a copy of this recording after we complete the webinar today, either this evening or tomorrow. I'll send you a follow-up email with the recording, as well as some supplemental documents that we have created through the MDSC that align with some of the content that we're going to be talking about today. So overall, our big goal today is to talk about how to design effective education plans. So before I start, I always have to share my disclaimer that I recognize that nothing in education is universal. Nothing to do with children are universal or standardized. So while I am going to speak in generalizations today, while I'm going to speak of my personal experience or experience of those that I've had direct contact with, I do want to let you all know that individual circumstances should always be alongside whatever advice I'm going to be given today. Because if there was an easy prescription, we would all, you know, be kicking back and chilling out and relaxing. And we know that there's no easy prescription. One of my primary goals is to help. One of my primary goals in general through my roles as the MDSC Education Director, as well as through my consulting and, you know, in all the different roles that I play, I really want to be able to provide those who are sitting around a table planning for students with some perspective of what somebody else may be thinking in order to loosen up some of the tensions that lead to ineffective collaboration. It's really about collaboration. It's really about being flexible and thinking about things from multiple perspectives. And once we can do that, then we can move on and develop a plan that will hopefully best meet the needs of your student. So before we begin, I do just want to, Stephanie asked a question and she said, how does a parent decide which is better? Work that approximates grade level that is done with assistance, adult or peer, or work done independently that is several grades below grade level? And Stephanie, I'm very glad you asked that question, because that that is the million-dollar question. And what we're going to talk about today is how to develop a program where there's a balance of both of those things, and how we are sometimes very focused on the actual work. And what I'm going to encourage all of you to do today is to think outside the box and consider that both of those experiences are working towards developing skills. They just may not be the same skills. So Stephanie, I hope that we get to that question. Please clarify if as we go on there's something that you wanted to add to that. But you've kind of hit the nail on the head about a lot of the content that I'm going to be talking about. So as I said, in all the different roles that I've played, I want to share that, in my opinion, it is essential to consider all of these domains when we're planning for a student who has complex needs. So when we are thinking about an IEP, when we're thinking about the day-to-day of a student, they're not just learning one of these things. Development of academic competency, skills for independent living, development of communication and interpersonal skills, and skills related to behavior and self-regulation are all essential for independence when our students turn 22 and no longer have the support of school. You know, when we think of school as an institution, there is a very, very heavy focus on the development of academic competency. But we know that our kids are continually developing skills in all four of these areas. And their day-to-day should be designed that they're developing ongoing skills in all four areas. And how you do that is very different depending upon what you're focusing on. And remembering that, or keeping that in mind, as we all sit around the table planning for students, we want to make sure that we really are designing a balanced program that considers all four of these domains, and considers all four of these domains equally. What we're going to do today is walk through a little bit of a how to do that, and some things to keep in mind as you engage in that process. So, but remember this graphic right here, because we don't want to forget that all of these things are very, very important. And it really is about what we want our student to be doing in the long run. So one thing that we know about students who have complex needs is that the rate of development across these areas may be uneven, will probably be uneven. I know that for some of my students, they may make incredible progress in one of these areas, but their progress in another area may be less strong. So for instance, a student who has a real burst in communication and interpersonal skills and self-regulation may not be showing as many sight words that they can read independently in that moment. And I don't have an easy answer for that. I just wanted to say before we go into this that is something that as a teacher I would see, is that sometimes, especially with much younger students, it would seem like there was a lot of energy being put into by this student around one of these domains. And whether that's good or bad, I just want to acknowledge that, because what can happen is that we can start to panic when we don't see even growth across all areas. And what I just want to caution everyone about is we have to make sure that we really value the progress that our student is making, and that this uneven rate of progress is not a cause to think, oh my gosh, they're not getting what they need, what can I do more, we have to change things. You want to note it, but don't immediately panic about it, because
well, we're going to come right back in just a moment and finish up the segment. Any comments before we go to a break? What they were talking about?
I'd like to hear more of what she's talking about with progress, unevenness to progress. I want to hear more what she's got to say about that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We'll come right back in a moment. This is the Community Living Show. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're going to conclude our show with the ending of the IEP Development Considerations for Effective Advocacy, also known as the Down Syndrome, from Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress. Now, for more information, check under www.mdsc.com. Also, if you want to ask a question about our bus pass program, the question is, do you agree on eliminating $45 and adding the $25 monthly to the PWD pension? Email communitylivingradio@gmail.com or any other information that we do on our show, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Here's the rest of the clip.
It could be just where your child is at that moment in time, because it does take longer for skills to develop. And sometimes there may be more energy being put into one domain or another domain. So remember that for our kids, despite the fact that we're in a very highly achievement-oriented educational landscape, their progress may not look the same across all domains or equally across all domains. So this cartoon, I think, does a very nice job summing up one of the tensions that's present in general in education right now. This is a very challenging landscape for teachers and parents and students. There is a high emphasis on academic achievement, and that can absolutely unintentionally cause all of us to sometimes look at our students through a deficit lens. And when we start looking at our students through a deficit lens, then that's when anxiety starts to play a role. Because when you really notice all the things that your student is not doing, that's when you start to question yourself or doubt yourself or really start to overlook the progress that your child has made. You start to overlook the skills that your child does have, and it can create some difficulties. So this is my platform in which I really want to make sure that everyone realizes this is where I'm coming from. by no means am I saying that if you have a child that isn't making progress, that you don't want to investigate it more. As I said before, you really want to consider your individual situation as you listen to all this advice. I just wanted to put out there that it isn't necessarily a cause to panic, because while you look at where a student may not have made progress in one area, be sure to look at where else they have made progress and make sure that you consider and celebrate those achievements of your student. So you know what, before we move on to the next section, Marilyn also asked a question, so I'm going to just read it. It says, when I tell my daughter's team that I want my daughter in the classroom as much as possible, they always say she isn't able to do grade level math and reading, so she shouldn't receive individual instruction instead of being frustrated by the subject matter. I don't have a good comeback for that, but my gut tells me she should be in the classroom. Any advice on how to counter that judgment? That is a great question. And we are going to talk a little bit about that. We are going to talk a little bit about when to consider targeted individualized instruction and when to consider classroom instruction. And so the very quick answer to that question is that I would encourage you all to not leave it at that. And we'll talk a little bit about this in a few minutes. I don't think that a blanket answer of she can't do this work, so therefore we recommend this, may be enough. I think that everybody needs to look at what a student requires and how they're going to get it. And within reading and math, if the goals for the student align with something that they're going to be able to achieve within that instructional setting, then you should consider that instructional setting. If it isn't, then you want to think about, but when you want to think about other skills that may require a different instructional conditions, you want to actually engage in that conversation. And Lynette, I can see that you have to jump off. Lynette said that her students have actually come back in the classroom, and I just want to let you know that it will be available as a recording. So don't worry if anybody has to jump off, especially with this noontime webinar, you will have a chance to receive the recording if your life interferes with your ability to watch the rest. So, in a very broad sense, I think that we should always work backwards to ensure that the individual needs of your student are being met. The educational placement should not be the first thing that you consider. The placement, when we front-end our conversation about meeting our student's need with placement, it is much, much less effective than if we engage in a systematic process of really evaluating where a student is at and what they need at that moment, or when I say at that moment, to plan for the next year. So that's my caveat. To start the conversation with the where is really defeating the purpose, because you never really get to the what or the how when you really start with the where. It is really, really important that we don't identify the conditions of how we're going to instruct before we identify the outcome. So when we talk about the where and the how without having a real clear picture of what our goals are, then it really makes everybody's job harder. It is very important for everyone on the team to really engage in the conversation related to where is this student at and where do we want to see this student going. So Before we talk about the where or the how, it's really important for every team to really stop and think about what are the overall areas of strengths for this student. As I said, for students who have really complex needs, it is so easy to jump right into the what don't they know how to do? They're not keeping up here. These are things that they struggle with. It's so, so hard to do that. And I'm encouraging every team to make sure that they stop and think about the strengths before they delve into those areas of weakness. It just changes everybody's perspective when we front end our thoughts and ask ourselves, where does this student shine? Where has this student made progress? What kinds of instruction is this student most receptive to? And we have to think through especially that question across all domains. So where a teacher may say, when I'm teaching your child how to read, they do better when it's she and I or he and I. We are breaking it down into very, very small steps. We're really engaging in instructional activities completely based on the individual data of your student. That's true specialized instruction. And that's the specialized instruction, especially related to reading, that's recommended by a lot of the researchers. Just a couple of months ago, I saw Sue Buckley, and she again emphasized the necessity for a focus on reading instruction, where we're building vocabulary, and we are really making sure that the instruction is very, very targeted to where that student is at and designed based upon data based on that student. So where we may look at that very narrow lens of reading instruction and say, this is how your child really responds to reading instruction under these conditions. However, when we're talking about communication skills, your child does really great during a read aloud in our classroom after we've previewed the content. So we want to make sure that we're not throwing everything in one bucket. We want to look at all of those domains and say, where do they shine? Where do they respond best? What are they most receptive to? Where really have they made a lot of progress? So once we think about that, then we want to go into where is this student right now, and where do we feel like they're prime for instruction to grow and move on to next? So we want to be thinking about the areas of short-term growth, but at the same time, we really want to be thinking about areas of long-term growth. And while I have areas of short-term growth first, because that's really where you're going to hash out the nitty-gritty, you're going to hash out the nitty-gritty of what the nuts and bolts of that particular IEP will be. We always want to have in the back of our mind who we envision this individual to be at 22 when the structure of public schools won't be available for this student. And so while we're planning, we want to be visualizing what we want to see this student able to do independently in their community, or when I say independently, with the minimum amount of external supports as possible, because we want to make sure that we're not forgetting some of those subtle things that we want a student to be able to do. Make sure that we're not planning for access to a curriculum where this student will require constant adult support to access it. Because at 22, will that student have developed the skills of independent living that they will require to be able to navigate their community independently? But at the same time, we don't want a student to enter into the world of 22 because they've been completely sheltered and every aspect of their day has been modified. neither of those things are ideal for anybody. So while the IEP is really going to be grounded in this, in the blue area, the short-term growth area, we never want to lose sight of that long-term piece in our visualization of where is this student going to be at 22? Where do we want them to be? So when we think about the areas of short-term growth, that's really what are the goals that we're going to focus on over the next academic school year. So you want to be asking yourself, based on the foundational skills that this student exhibits or has, what are the smaller steps that we would want to identify to see this student demonstrating next? A student has already developed one-to-one counting and basic addition using manipulatives. Well, we may want to move on to making it more abstract using a number line. We may want to look at introducing subtraction for this student. You want to think about where this student is at and what are the next smaller steps that can be taken. At the same time, when you think about the short-term growth, you also want to be thinking about more concerning areas of weakness that need to be addressed more immediately. So for instance, skills related to behavior and self-regulation, a deficit in these skills can often lead to weaknesses around communication, weaknesses in academics, weaknesses in the ability to develop skills of independent living. This is definitely something that needs to be considered. When a student is very, very dysregulated, then a dysregulated student is much less open to any type of instruction than a student who has already developed some of those skills. So this is part of the conversation that you want to have with your team.
And actually, we're going to leave it there, but you can check out more on the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress on YouTube. Search word IEP development considerations for effective advocacy. Search for that. That is it, pretty much time that we have. Next week, we're going to have an interview with DP Lee, who is the one of our CITR programmers on All Access Pass. Be sure to listen to it to later today at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on accessibility travel on Vancouver Airport, accessibility on WestJet, anything to do with accessibility travel. So DB has all the information on that. And again, please tune in after 5 o'clock for their program. It should be interesting, Michael.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can always check our email as well, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Our question, do you agree on the $45 elimination to replace the bus pass with a $25 PWD plan? Email communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Thank you very much for tuning in to the show. And any last words before we go?
I think we've covered everything.
We covered everything.
Yeah.
Okay. You may have a special guest on in August?
Yeah, in August. And she wrote a book. I'll share what her book is about on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And hopefully I'll have her Facebook information at the same time. So our listeners can just kind of check it out.
All right.
Yep, but we'll have her on.
All right. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for upcoming shows around the NCRA Radio Networks. We will be back again next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
residency center.